Hello, and welcome to another Made in Media Group production of On Purpose Magazine, featuring interesting, inspiring, educational, and entertaining stories, discussions, and interviews of purpose, with purpose, on purpose.
Hello, everybody. This is J.W. Najarian with On Purpose Magazine, and we have the lovely, wonderful, good old friend of mine, Yvonne Oswald, Dr. Yvonne Oswald now. How are you doing today, Yvonne?
I'm doing awesome, J.W. Thank you for inviting me on.
Oh, no problem. Last time we did an interview, you had not finished your PhD, but now you have finished.
I have finished my PhD in clinical hypnosis, and it's all about emotions and how to make them work for you.
Well, that's cool. This is kind of a special call today. I asked you on because some people may know and some people may not know that I am the founder of U.S. Veterans on LinkedIn. That's about 26,000 veteran members. These are veterans of every war. And so I wanted to bring you on today because you teach, you actually work with a lot of people with PTSD. And as
yes.
we were speaking last week, you've come up with a PTSD cure, you believe a cure, that is actually quite simple and extremely quick.
Yeah, we don't call this a cure. We're not allowed to call things
okay.
cures, but it works.
It's a treatment that works.
Yes, it works. Fantastic.
And let me talk about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. It's an epidemic happening right now, and it's not just about, I know we're going to be talking about the veterans. You know, we're kind of focusing mm-hmm. on veterans a little bit because of the group that I have, but anybody can get post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, it could be combat exposure, like we just talked about, sexual, child sexual or physical abuse, terrorist attacks, sexual or physical assaults, serious accidents, natural disasters, and with Sandy mm-hmm. just happening, post-traumatic syndrome is one of those things where everybody who gets into, who has a an issue or occurrence that is traumatic to them will probably go mm-hmm. through some kind of stuff. The issue with post-traumatic stress disorder is it's something, it's a stress-related reaction that doesn't go away.
It just
continues. It stays with you for years and years.
Yeah.
And so even the people that were in the issues with New Orleans and overseas with the traumatic issues over there, these people are not over these issues years and years later, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And here's the thing. I don't like to call it post-traumatic stress disorder because it is post-traumatic stress, but it's actually showing that your unconscious mind is working extremely well.
Yes.
It's a wonderful survival mechanism, and people just don't know how to switch it off. That's all.
Oh, right. I'm going to back up a little bit, Yvonne, because I wanted to introduce and let people know who you are.
Okay.
For people who don't know Yvonne, or Dr. Oswald, we'll call you.
Dr. Yvonne.
Dr. Yvonne. Okay, Dr. Yvonne.
Yvonne is more friendly, J.W.
There you go.
Who I am, yeah.
I apologize. Dr. Yvonne is a national U.S. award-winning pioneer in the field of personal growth, voted a 2010 Woman of Influence and Inspiration by the Ministry of Government Services, Ontario, and chair of the board of Toronto Youth Day. She is renowned and respected communications trainer and keynote speaker, a certified trainer of hypnosis and master practitioner of NLP, nominated for the COVR, the Cover Visionary Award, for her unique CD, Mind Magic, her way to release negative emotions and limiting beliefs in less than a minute, which she actually did on our last interview. If you go listen to that, she actually did a little of that. She has an outstanding reputation for her exciting, innovative, and interactive seminars. You are British-born, qualified teacher with 20 years of experience. Dr. Yvonne helps every audience clear issues and quantum leap their personal growth and life choices. Her best-selling book, Every Word Has Power, was published by Atra Beyond Words, who brought you The Secret. And last time we spoke about your book, Every Word Has Power, and it was a very, talk about, no pun intended, it was a very powerful interview.
And it's now in 10 languages. It's fantastic. It's all over the world.
Oh, that's incredible. So beyond my terrible reading of your bio, let's start with the unconscious mind and how we'll just kind of like, you know, start from the base and go up and kind of get into this PTSD thing.
Right, okay. So the unconscious mind is 90% of who you are. The conscious mind, which is what we think with, is only 10% of us. It's basically, you know, what you can see, feel, hear, touch. It's your five senses, plus a little bit of extra sixth sense, plus what you make decisions about.
Okay.
And when we make a decision consciously, we pass the information to the unconscious, and the unconscious runs a program which is purely what's called a servo mechanism. It's exactly like the internet. The unconscious mind doesn't have thoughts or feelings. It just simply has responses. So as we talked about in the last interview, when you use words with your unconscious mind, it simply picks up on keywords, and it only goes with those keywords and gives you responses based on the keywords. So if you're talking about happiness, health, optimism, it's going to go ahead and go and bring you masses of things that to make you feel optimistic, happy, and healthy. If you talk in other words, like low energy words, it's going to bring you more of those as well.
Right.
So that's why they said the law of attraction works. And it's not so much the law of attraction, it's simply what you're going to tell your unconscious mind to go off and fetch you back. Right? Now, it
right.
has the most amazing, amazing resources. This is like your magic genie in the lamp. And the more I studied the unconscious mind, the more I got excited about it, because I suddenly realized not only can it bring us resources, but we can tell it what to do, and it will go ahead and do it as long as you know what to say. And obviously through my PhD study, because it took me 6 years, I suddenly realized that I was looking at the simplest mechanism in the whole universe. It works exactly, literally by you code in something and it gives you back exactly what you coded in. It's such a simple program. And it needs a command inflection. It needs to be told what to do, not asked sweetly what to do. You know, the conscious mind needs the sweetness. The unconscious mind simply needs clear instructions, direct commands. And I started playing with this idea.
Let me see if I got this right, because you're saying your reactive mind or your unconscious mind just reacts to either internal words, internal thoughts, or sometimes or external things in your life, and can cause you to do all kinds of negative things because of fight or flight, or it can cause you to sabotage yourself and all kinds of negative stuff. But you can actually, the exciting thing is you can work with it and use the reactive mind to actually do positive things in your life.
Correct. Now, the thing is, there's a bit of a difference between the fight and flight thing and what you're commanding it to do.
Okay.
The fight and flight mechanism is a total, total gut response that's deep-wired into your neurology. It's a survival mechanism. So it comes from 200,000 years ago when we were in the jungle, and, you know, you're walking through the jungle, and suddenly someone comes towards you, and you have 0.015 of a second to know if that person's friendly or not.
Right.
And it will give you the anger or the fight or flight response, which is anger and fear. Usually the flight response is the initial one. You run away. Okay?
Right.
And that's the fear response. And then the anger response is where you stay and you fight it out. Now, when someone comes to you with their arms open and their eyebrows up and smiling and happy and looking towards you, your unconscious mind is then going to give you a beautiful response of feel good, hey, this is a friend, make friends, to smile back at them. So that's your survival mechanism. On a day-by-day basis, it is actually giving you those negative and positive emotions to say, we need to talk, or you're safe, it's okay, go ahead. Very, very simply. Now, the thing is that it also, its survival response, it gives you emotions as a messaging system. It also, when you use words back to it, any words that have emotions in them is also that same messaging system back. So if you say, I hate that TV show, it's not looking for the TV show. It's looking for the only one, the only emotionally biased word in that sentence, which is not a word you want it to go off searching for, really. Also, with those words, 20% of the words we use have emotional context. Now, if we keep on going back to an event, with negative words, so it was terrible, it's going to increase the emotional weight of that event because we keep talking negatively about it.
Okay.
Okay? Now, here's the most interesting thing about it. The reason you keep going back to it is the second biggest response that your unconscious mind does. So if you're in any way threatened, your unconscious mind will drop everything and take over and just go in and sort things out. You won't have a choice. Your unconscious mind will pop in. Okay?
Right.
So if you say to a child, hey, darling, drop that knife, the child will carry on playing with it. If you say, drop the knife, sweetie, it's not very safe, it will carry on playing with it. If you say, drop the knife now, the child will drop the knife on the floor and both hands up. Because you've given it a tonality, you've given it a command response that says, hey, there may be danger around here. Get it? So
right.
With your unconscious mind, to use a command inflection with it, it will immediately take notice of you. And if there's any stretch of self whatsoever, it will immediately take over and give you your deep-wired fight or flight response, plus anything else it needs to do to keep you alive. So, for instance, during a car crash, there will be no emotions present. You may be thinking, oh, how interesting, this is the moment I die, or, you know, something like that. It's actually quite neutral during a car crash. Immediately afterwards, the emotions come up and you cry, you get angry, you release it. Because during the moment, it needs to get you through it. It needs to get you alive. It will take over. It will say, give me those emotions. I'm taking them. Let me look after them. When it's over and complete, then we'll get the response and clear it out of your physical body. Because that's where it stores emotional responses and memories, is in your physical body. Okay?
Right.
This is what happens when we're going into the post-traumatic stress thing. Because during the moment things happen, we tend to be either neutral, standing still, observing. You even might sometimes leave your body to watch what's going on. And it's your emotional response from your unconscious mind to say, let me sort it out. Any emotions, let's put to one side and let's sort them out later. Now, what happens normally is people will come in and they'll say, oh, you're fine now. Don't cry. Don't be angry. Don't do this. What does your unconscious mind do with those emotions then? Right?
Yeah.
You told it not to do it, and suddenly there's a huge mass of emotions that need to be released from the physical body and from the whole experience, and they get tucked away. The unconscious mind goes, oh, really? We can't release them yet? Okay, well, let me look after them till later, right? And it will store those emotions away until such times as an appropriate time when you're back to normal, you're doing your everyday life, and then suddenly you have this huge emotional response comes up. And it's simply your unconscious mind saying, can I let go of these now? Because I've kind of held on to these long enough.
Yeah, I don't know if it's always appropriate, Dr. Yvonne, because I'm one of those people, and a lot of people might react to this, and that is, I'm good under pressure. A pressure situation, a car crash,
I can run
there and I can help. I'm good at that, and then later on, that's when I fall apart. And it's not always, you know, at the right time, but it is, I guess it's that time when your body says, okay, I'm done doing the thing I need to do. It's time to deal with the emotions.
Exactly. And you weren't falling apart. You were actually putting yourself back together at that point.
Oh, okay.
It's quite the opposite. So that emotional release is an AMBA reaction that says, can we release this from the body to be healthy?
Okay. Right.
You'll see it happen at weddings, JW. You know, you're at a wedding, and all the three-year-olds come out to play at the weddings, you know. It's like, you always got attention from Mum. No, you didn't. And everyone, all the shouting matches happen, and everybody's in tears. And all those needs that weren't met before you were 7 years old are coming out to play, you know, as an adult, inappropriately, as you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is, your unconscious mind is in charge of those emotions. It presents an emotion according to the circumstance, according to the situation. If it's got a huge amount stored up of stuff you haven't let it release, and that's from a lot of parents saying, you know, it's okay to love me, it's okay to be sad, but it's not okay to be angry, darling. Right? What does the child do with all the anger except store it somewhere? Right? And when you get into a situation later, or when you get into a threatening situation, sooner or later there's going to be a tipping point, and those emotions are going to go over the top, and you're going to have that as like a bag of emotions coming up, sometimes for what appears to be no good reason, except
right.
that your unconscious mind went, oh, I remember this from when we were 7. You remember this? Here's what happened then, too. Okay? And, you know, this thing comes up, and we wonder where it came from.
Right.
Now, with the post-traumatic stress disorder, what's really interesting is, I mean, I had a lady just this morning, you know, her husband had committed suicide 12 years ago, and she's had that with her every day of her life. When I mentioned it, she immediately felt the gut emotional response and the whole thing associated with it. And I immediately got my little bag of tricks out and cleared it in 2 minutes flat. And she said, how did you do that? And I said, we simply take an old memory and we replace it with a new memory, one that's safe, all right? Which leads me to that second part of the unconscious mind's biggest job and the most interesting one. It's that it needs to complete things. And when something is incomplete, it will keep on re-going and re-going like a loop that goes back and back. You know when you've had a memory that you just can't seem to get out of your head?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what it will keep going back to and saying, is it okay for me to let this memory go yet? Because I'm not sure. Is it okay for me to let this memory go yet? Because I'm not sure. Is it okay? And it will keep on nagging at you until you finally go, yes, it's finished. Right? And all people do is just keep reliving the memory and not giving the unconscious mind an instruction.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny because I'm sure a lot of us have done this where we come up with inappropriate anger way
yes,
over the top.
Absolutely.
When
yep.
we get, you know, when we're reacting to something our wife says or somebody in our life says.
Yes.
And you wonder, where did that come from?
Yeah, and it came from before you were 7 years old when you got angry at your mom or your dad and one of them said, don't be angry at me. And you basically just store the stuff up until it comes out, and it has to come up to be resolved. It's not healthy to keep that stuff. And your unconscious mind knows that and really attempts to bring it back into balance and clear it out. So it will do anything to clear that stuff.
So it's post-traumatic syndrome, or what they call that disorder. Is it just all the trauma not being resolved?
It's an extension of that. It's a little different in as much as. Okay, so let's go back to mom saying to the five-year-old, I can't believe you did that. How did you do that? The kid gets angry and says, I hate you. Mom says, you're not allowed to hate me. How dare you? Go to your room. So then the kid cries, and mom says, oh, sweetie, it's okay. I didn't mean to shout at you. And the child thinks, it's okay to cry, not okay to be angry. I get love from my mother when I cry. I don't get love when I get angry. So it's inappropriate. It's taught very young that it's inappropriate to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
Anger's top dog. You know, if you don't get angry, you don't get, you really repress it somewhere and it's all stuck away. So what happens is, later on, if something's like a situation of sexual abuse, it's huge because that child has to survive that abuse. It knows it's wrong. It knows there's something. The child has been told, don't tell anybody. There's a lot of secrets around it. And it,
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, my gosh, what do I do? Particularly if it's, say, like a parent abusing, okay? And they're in that situation, which is totally so traumatizing that they can't even have any emotions around it sometimes because it's too scary to look at, right? And it keeps locked away and maybe may not even surface for a resolution until years later when the situation's safe again.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes may never be resolved because the child may never feel safe. What happens at that moment when that fear is there, when that trust is betrayed, when that anger is there, the unconscious mind makes it is almost like put on duty, put on guard. So any time in the future something similar to that happens, the unconscious mind goes, whoa, are we safe here? Can we talk? That's how phobias can develop. You know, a dog barks at a child, they get scared, mother overreacts, and suddenly you've got a phobia on your hands. Okay, or the dog bites the child, even more so, and the phobia is there, right? What
right.
happens with post-traumatic stress, particularly the one that's from Vietnam vets, is they are put in a situation which is literally life-threatening, literally. They know the loud noises, the banging, they're seeing things happening around them, and it's terrifying, and at the same time, they have to get through it, right? They get through it, they come home, they come back to the U.S., and suddenly they're reliving it over and over and over and over again. And then suddenly what happens is they go on to high alert, and every little noise, the unconscious mind goes, oh, noise! My God, we nearly died last time that happened. Oh, my gosh, this happened. Green leaves, last time we saw green leaves, it was in the forest. And suddenly you've got hundreds and hundreds of reactions from the unconscious mind saying, stay on high alert, stay on high alert. Oh, my God, we could die, right?
Right.
And nobody bothers to tell the unconscious mind that the danger's over. It just needs to be told to stand down. Thank you, we got it. Right? Because it's unresolved, it's never been given the instruction, and there are very, very simple ways, sweet ways to give the instruction that make it go, oh, really? Cool. I can back down now and stop bringing you fabulous resources instead.
Is this often very emotional?
No, it's quite the opposite. I used to do a lot of work like rebirthing and talk therapy and all the other stuff. I mean, I had to do it on my own childhood because I had a very abusive childhood. When I was 13, my father told me that he'd wished I'd died instead of my sister. So I had a huge amount of stuff to deal with. You know, it was very violent. I got, beaten every day. Both mother and father were very good at hitting. And I kind of swallowed it until I was in my 20s, and it came up physically with me. So I got hepatitis, meningitis, and Lyme's disease all at the same time. Had to rethink my life and started having to work through some of the emotional baggage I've been carrying. So I did a lot of emotional work, and it was really not pleasant to go through. When I was in my 30s, I discovered hypnosis and NLP and timeline, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is sweet, this is easy. You close your eyes, you're given a suggestion, and your whole life changes. With the NLP, the neuro-linguistic programming, we simply take a memory and just neurologically interconnect it with a happy memory and a safe memory, and you can never, ever go back to that original memory. It's gone forever. You know? Let me give you an example. A friend of ours actually came to me, and he said, I'm in my 60s. He said, I've had, an okay life. He said, I've not been very happy all my life. He said, I'm not sure why. He said, I've just kind of assumed that everybody else was as depressed as I was. He said, and I keep crying all the time. I'm crying for humanity. I'm crying for this. I'm crying for that. And I said to him, okay, and, as I was looking through his notes, I said, someone died when you were young. I said, who was it? He said, no, nobody died. I said, who died? He said, no. I said, before you were seven, I said, seven or around there is when things change. I said, you can rationalize after that. Before you were seven, what happened? Nope, can't think of anything. Can't think of anybody, he said. I said, your mother, father, close friend? Nope, nobody. So I said to him, well, when was the first time you experienced death? And he said, oh, it was my neighbor's death. I said, and what happened around that? He said, oh, yeah, my brother and I discovered him hanging when I was about seven. And I was like, okay, then, that might have something to do with this. And he's like, how? And what had happened? He said, I didn't think it was very important at the time. He said, it didn't seem to bother me. He said, and then my father had a nervous breakdown. He said, and, I kind of got a bit depressed after that. And he said, it's only now that it's coming up. Why? And his unconscious mind, literally by everybody's reaction, he kind of, on one level, made the decision, oh, my gosh, I best not be emotional here because I can't do this, I can't do this. And he's literally been sitting on it for almost 60 years. And it came up for resolution when he appeared to be in a happy time because his unconscious mind finally said, thank God, can we get rid of this now? And it was really fascinating. He didn't realize until, we did the session and he started putting two and two together and realized that's why he'd never let himself get intimate with anybody. That's why he never got close to anybody. In case they left him, in case they had a nervous breakdown. He lost not only, he didn't have just the experience with the person hanging. He also lost his father's attention and love at that point because his father kind of had a breakdown because of it.
Wow.
He'd been in post-traumatic stress his whole life and not even known it. Email me and phone me afterwards and said, is this what it's like to be happy? This is amazing. I didn't know you could feel like this on a day-to-day basis. Yeah,
wow.
It's amazing.
Let me ask you something again. I apologize if I missed it in your explanation, but you talk a lot about everything that happened before you were 7 years old.
Yeah.
And if somebody had a wonderfully happy childhood but then went to war or into battle and got post-traumatic syndrome from that, that has nothing to do with anything before seven. You can get that at any time, or is anything that happened before seven, does it bring it up, or how does that work?
That's a really, really interesting question, because that was my exact question. I have had everything to do with insects you could possibly imagine. I had a termite burrowing itself into my ear and had to go to hospital to have it removed. It was very painful. I had a wasp that stung me on the back of my throat, so I passed out and ended up in hospital. I had hepatitis. I had meningitis from a mosquito. I had Lyme's disease from a tick bite. You would think that I would have a phobia about insects, right?
Right.
Absolutely zero phobias. I have no opinions about insects whatsoever. And I kept thinking, why would that be? Why would it be? Because this was like at 15, 25. And it was because I had nothing to do with insects before I was seven. If I had had a scary incident with an insect before I was seven, I guarantee I would have a phobia about insects right now. There was nothing to do any triggers before I was seven. Therefore, by the time I dealt with it at 25, it was just, it was what it was, right?
Right.
Now, people who go to Vietnam, there are people who have childhoods and have, you know, things happen in Vietnam, and they come out and they just say, there you go, got over it, moving on. Others don't. Others have, like, the sequence of things that happened before they were seven, when they did not feel safe in some way, has to be triggered later. And I'm still
very
open on this one.
Let me throw in something here, because I was looking at the PTSD.gov site, and they were talking about, they say men and Americans have had a trauma about 60% of men and about 50% of women experience at least one traumatic event in their lifetimes.
Right.
Of those who do, only about 8% of men and 20% of women will develop PTSD for some of the events.
Exactly, because it was something incomplete from their childhood.
Wow.
When it, if it's incomplete, it, what happens is when we don't get one of our basic needs met, love, security, you know, food, clothes, etc., and particularly recognition and acceptance, acceptance and true love, if one of those three isn't really met, it comes up later needing to be resolved. And what happens is it leaves us in a state of wanting for our whole life, you know, this insatiable wanting that leads us to alcoholism or foodism or anorexia or bulimia or whatever it is that we choose to put the, you know, ism on the end of it.
Right.
There has to have been something that happened when they're a child that comes back during that incident to remind them, because it wasn't complete, it wasn't over, that nobody rationalized it. Even something as simple as, you know, my parents divorcing when I was six or whatever. At that time, I've made a decision. My parents didn't divorce, by the way, when I was six, but just, you know, that as an example. If I make a decision, oh, my gosh, it must have been me. Maybe I was the one who caused it. The best friend dying in battle at 18, they might well take on that same idea, and suddenly they've got the post-traumatic stress disorder because it's just reliving what wasn't resolved. Nobody bothered to say to the child, hey, it wasn't your fault, we both love you. Get it? So it's like,
yeah,
there has to have been a leftover from something in the childhood for it to trigger that post-traumatic stress disorder. It's almost like a build-up of events, and of course, because they're feeling inadequate about that, they're going to relive that through the teens, they're going to, and suddenly one event can just tip them over the top.
Wow, that's really interesting. I wonder,
fabulous.
Of the numbers we just talked about, it says women get, are obviously 8% of men and 20% of women develop PTSD from a traumatic issue. Have you seen that happen, and can you explain why that might be?
Because women typically are taught to not speak about things. It's like, you know, be quiet, be good, look at your sister, she's fabulous, da-da-da-da. Men tend to, but they'll say, oh, boys will be boys. Look at them, they're having a good fight. They're, you know, it's okay for them to express the anger. It's okay for them to express. Women are more allowed to express fear. Boys are allowed to express anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and anger's top dog. If you express the anger, you'll stay fairly well in control of things, if you're allowed to express anger or direct it into thumping a cushion or something. Women,
right,
particularly, girls in particular, it's not ladylike to be angry. It's not ladylike to be fearful. It's not ladylike. You know, you just be a good girl. You be kind, be clever, etc. And they're just, in our society, they're just not allowed to express their emotions as easily.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter, when she was young, I let her be angry. She would yell at me.
Yes, I remember we talked about that.
You're the worst parent in the world. And I'd say, good, awesome, gold medal today, fabulous. You know? And, you know, parents seem to expect apologies from their children. They shouldn't expect apologies from their children. Their job is as a parent. They're supposed to teach them how to express adequately the emotions that come up. You know, and it's something that can be something like a child who has an alcoholic father. Quite often, they're the ones who are going to get the post-traumatic stress, because it just reminds them of their childhood, that feeling of being out of control. I mean,
right,
you know, when you come to the bottom line, it's about lack of self-esteem and lack of control, feeling like you can't control the environment. And we all use self-soothing mechanisms to control what's happening around us. You know, some of us will eat too much, or some of us will watch TV. You know, there are healthy methods to self-soothe, and there are unhealthy methods to self-soothe. You know, and what happens is a single memory can be cleared very, very quickly. So someone who witnesses a hanging, for instance, The lady this morning, I got rid of that memory in 2 minutes. She'll never go back there, I 100% guarantee. You know, and the thing is that memory stands in the place of you going forward. Years ago, a few years ago, I was actually teaching a group in Florida, a group of hypnotherapists. And I said, okay, I was being clever, you know, and I said, who's got the least good memory in the whole universe that they want to clear? And this woman said, well, 26 years ago, my husband and three children were killed in a car crash, and I was the only survivor. And I've relived it every single day since. I've had therapy. I've become a hypnotherapist. She said, yesterday I was doing EMDR. She said, I'm still suicidal. She said, I even married again. She said, but I don't really truly feel I've loved my husband because I hear the screams every day, and I feel it every day. And I said, okay, come on down. And I did this little switch. I switched that memory with a memory when she felt 100% in control, when she was standing in front of a group of a whole theater of people singing, and, you know, she got a standing ovation. She said it was the best moment of her life. She loved it. Literally just switched those two memories over, and she looked at me and burst into tears, and she said, that's the first time I felt the love for my children in 26 years. Thank you. Thank you.
Wow.
And she kept calling me for weeks afterwards saying, oh, you saved my life. She said, this is amazing. She said, I love my husband. She said, I can't believe that was in my way. It was literally standing in front of her face every time she looked through because it was incomplete. The unconscious mind was saying, could this happen again to us? Could we die? Oh, my God. What if, what if, what if? And simply by clearing the memory away, it's huge. You know,
people are listening in this call and they want to know, are my problems PTSD related? Are they not? How do you know if you have this issue or if you have another issue? How do you define that?
PTSD is really the top dog in a series of events where which negative emotions are present. So you've got a negative emotion come up on a daily basis. It's a kind of very, very mild form of PTSD,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you've got memories coming up on a daily basis where you keep going back and, you know, it's like your husband betrays you or your wife betrays you. You'll keep going back and going back and going back, and it'll every day it'll come up and it'll come up and it'll be, you know, and it's basically your unconscious mind saying, can we let this go yet? Can we let this go yet? Can we let this go yet? And any one of those incidents we can clear really, really fast and simply. Now, coming from your childhood, there's going to be a series of events that led back to that one thing. You know, you tend to marry your unconscious mind. So you'll
right.
marry whatever you didn't resolve as a child, thinking that it's going to resolve it, and of course it doesn't. It brings it back up. You know, after 3 years, all the stuff comes up to the surface, right? And,
right.
you know, and you look and you go, oh, my God, I married my mother, or I married my father, or I married both of them, right? And it's really funny the way we attempt to resolve it by going at it, right? So if you have any negative emotions and limiting beliefs around, then you're sorting out and moving through. You need to be able to just have a tool to say this works really well. So, you know, I teach a 3-day NLP class. I'm teaching in Florida in April. I teach a 3-day certification class, plus I teach a 9-day certification class. And during the 9 days, you completely clear your own stuff, and you have the tools to go out and work with these things with other people and help them. Because that's my goal, is that everyone have this tool set so that they can help other people as well.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because one of the issues I asked you, I said, hey, can we teach people on this call, or can you write a book, or what can you, you know, because right now, in order to get resolved, we have to go see you. You're up in Toronto,
yeah.
I understand,
exactly.
or at one of your events that you're going to be at. And
yeah.
if you're
yeah.
in an event with a lot of people, you know, I might not get seen. So you have this
yeah.
wonderful certification program where people can not only learn how to clear themselves, but help
mm-hmm.
others.
Yes. And, you know, I used to teach, you know, the straight NLP, the straight hypnosis and stuff I learned, and then I realized that I had a lot more tools than even they did. Started putting things together, so I've won awards from the National Association of Transpersonal Hypnotherapists for the most unique contribution to the field of hypnosis. I won one in November for the most unique clinical application of hypnosis, and that's with the work around emotions because I'm really good at it. I've got some awesome, fast techniques. You know, the book, Every Word Has Power, has
mm-hmm.
some techniques in them. There's a kit, the Your Every Word Has Power kit, which has more techniques. And I'm just in the process of writing another book with more techniques. But at each class, I bring in all my new techniques. I bring my best tools out right up front in the first class I teach. It's like, okay, you're here. Here's some tools. Go ahead and use them right away. And they're instantaneous. People go, oh, my God. You know, even your physiology, you put your chin up an inch. You know the expression, keeping your chin up. You put your chin up an inch, you look straight ahead, you become aware of what's on the right and the left. Take a deep breath so your diaphragm is released. So, you know, release the diaphragm and instantly you're in a feel-good position. You can't imagine any negative emotions because you're in a different part of your brain. You know, just checking into your power center, which is three fingers below your belly button. Just it, literally thinking of three fingers below your belly button, and instantly you'll feel more safe. You know, this. I've got hundreds of tricks to teach people how to feel safe, how to feel good, how to make themselves get out of the emotion fast and move on, you know.
So we can go on beyond things like PTSD. You can help people with their phobias also, right?
Oh, phobias is the simplest thing in the world. Yeah, really, really easy. Phobias like, oh, you know what, JW, I love the heavy-duty ones. The phobias. When they come to me and say, I've tried everything, I'm like, awesome. Let me get my hands on you. Yay. It's really, because I was there for so many years, and I know how I got out of it. And, you know, I had a big smile plastered all over my face while inside I was not feeling great.
Right.
And I know when I see someone today, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Hey, this is what I used to get out of that. You know, I had to invent so many techniques for myself because I didn't have any outside help. You know, and, I mean, sexual abuse and being told you wish you died instead of your sister, it's a fairly heavy thing to have to deal with as a 13-year-old.
Yeah, especially you know? If you don't have tools.
I had no tools.
Right.
So by the time I was in my mid-20s, all I wanted to do was wake up every morning and die. You know, and it was simply because I kept thinking, okay, what can I do? And I used to literally lie there in bed at 10 in the morning and think, okay, by the time I get up, it's 11 o'clock, I'm going to have my piece of toast, I'm going to have my coffee, and then I'll feel better. And sure enough, by 11 o'clock, I was feeling good. And by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd be fine, and I'd be like, oh, that was interesting. I didn't realize I was teaching my unconscious mind how to feel better. I was just giving myself positive reinforcement every day and actually learning how to tell my unconscious mind what to do.
Okay, so for anybody who this makes sense to and is interested in PTSD or some of these other issues we talked about are causing many, many negative issues in their life, how can we get a hold of you?
You can get me by email at Yvonne, Y-V-O-N-N-E. At globalwelcome.com, G-L-O-B-A-L, welcome.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or go to the website, which is globalwelcome.com, and you can contact me through that. Yeah, or phone me. I'm really accessible by phone. I answer all my own emails and I answer all my own phone calls.
You do. I can vouch for that.
Because I found that all my assistants were doing, we're going, I have no idea what this person's talking about. Can you deal with it? I'm like, okay. You know, because I deal with such an, you know, a wonderful niche market, a really lovely place. You know, and it also works for just clearing the clouds away allows you to be successful too. So if you think of PTSD as a massive hurricane as opposed to, you know, a rainstorm, you know, in weather terminology, most people are walking around with a lot of little clouds above their head, which are negative emotions and limiting beliefs. Easy to clear away. If you've got a gathering from when you were a child of that, you know, it's like living in Manchester and living with eternal clouds, which is why I left Manchester in the first place, or living in Italy and Canada and seeing sunshine nearly every day, you know, or Barbados or somewhere. You know, it's really once those clouds have gone, they'll tend to go forever. It's all
that's good news. That's good news because there's a lot of people that are suffering out there needlessly.
A lot. Well, most people are feeling alone and feeling isolated and feeling like they're the only ones going through it. You know,
right.
One of the nicest things about being a therapist, you know, and being a keynote speaker is everybody's going through the same stuff. You go, wow, I felt like that too. You know, the more you get to work with people, the more you realize we're all the same, which is fabulous. You know, because we can, and my real goal is to train enough people and get enough people out there so that, you know, a couple of Vietnam vets can learn these techniques and help each other.
Yeah, and let me bring up, you know, when you were talking, you actually got a hold of me because you found out about me working with vets, and you wanted to do
this. I was thrilled when I saw your LinkedIn, because we were chatting on LinkedIn, I was like, you work with vets? You work with vets? Are you serious?
Yeah, it was very nice for you to call me because... Let me just tell everybody, I'm very thankful that you did, because you called me because you just wanted to help. You have this this incredible treatment that you know can help people, and you wanted to make sure you got the word out. And so I really appreciate that you got in touch.
Thank you. Because, I've worked with the police a little bit, and I've suggested to the police that I go in and train the police so that they can get over it, so they don't have to have all these divorces and feel all not good all the time. And they're like, yeah, interesting, but I don't think they'd take to it. So why wouldn't they take to it? Why would it be, a good thing to walk around with a load of garbage on your back?
Was it a machismo thing? What was that?
Machismo, yeah. It's like, yeah, you just suck it up. You know, the Vietnam vets are told to just suck it up. It's not normal to feel not good. It's normal to feel joyous and happy and feeling great every day with a little bit of occasional cloud going through.
Right.
But if you've got that long-term, even depression is not depression. It's not about sadness. Depression is, who are you angry at? That's the only question I ask. If someone comes to me, long-term depression, I'll say, who are you angry at? And it's usually mother or father. We do a lot of stuff when we're parents, and what can I say? And even the best parent in the world is going to bring stuff up for kids. So, and our job as parents is to be great parents and also teach our kids to be better parents than us.
Yeah, and someday we'll have to do an interview just on parenting alone. Because when I talked to you last time, go to the other interview, everybody, and listen. There's a part where you talk about how you brought up your daughter in there that's quite amazing, because it's very counterintuitive to what we think parenting is all about.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. We went for an interview, an audition this weekend with her to Boston, and she was like a roller coaster. Oh, my gosh, the emotions that came up for the poor girl. It was like, she's like, go away, you're banned. I don't want you here with me. And then it's like, Mom, can you stay with me? And I just went, okay. And by the end of it, she said, wasn't that a great weekend? I went, okay.
Yeah,
just no idea how much I had to just go, okay, and not respond to anything she was throwing at me.
Oh,
she says, it was awesome. It was one of the best weekends of my life. I'm like, good.
I just
wanted to sleep.
Everybody, I just want to let you know, Dr. Yvonne is... Oswald, you've been a friend of mine for a couple years now, and
I always
appreciate when you come on. I wish I could have you more often. I know you're always busy. You're always speaking somewhere or doing something, so
yeah.
I appreciate your time today.
Yeah. And I'll go anywhere anybody wants me to. It's like money's never usually the issue. It's like I like my expenses paid for sure, and I like to make some money. I do, if someone can get a group of people together, I'll come in and train. I'll be really happy to.
Yeah, yep, listen to her. Fabulous. Get everybody from California, get her out here. I've been wanting to get her out here for a while.
I'd love to come back.
Here.
I love L.A. I love the whole area. It's fabulous.
Yeah, that's great. Listen,
great, JW.
Your site again is global, say it again?
Globalwelcome.com, GlobalWelcome. Welcome.
That's wonderful.
Welcome.
And
welcome.
Dr. Yvonne, I'm going to give you the last word for people who might be suffering or are not sure after listening to this what they should do. I'm going to give you the last word as we leave out here.
I want to tell everybody that, being unhappy is not normal. Being unhappy means you need to change something in your life or go and talk to someone about, your stuff. But talk therapy really doesn't work that well. If you can find a hypnotherapist near you, awesome. Hypnosis is great. NLP is even better. If you can get to one of my trainings, please come. And most of all, make sure you plan some fun every day. Fun is really what's going to take you out of where you're going. Fun and creativity are the two things that you can do that will actually start the healing happening. And of course a physical workout too. So let's say the three things: a physical workout, go for a walk in the park, go to nature, something creative, paint, draw, do whatever you can, listen to music, and make sure you plan some fun every single day and time for yourself so that you actually can just get back to balance every single day, and at least it will see you through. Meditation helps too. Till you get.
Well, that's wonderful advice.
Fabulous.
Oh, I think most of us only look at all the crappy things that are going to happen to us in the day.
Yeah,
we don't make a plan for when we're going to enjoy ourselves.
It's true, because we're programmed to search for what's not. That's why, and we need to program ourselves for what is.
What's
lacking, as opposed to what is there, and knowing what's there and appreciating it and having gratitude every day is really important.
Well, I appreciate all that. And while I have you, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about something else we discussed. You have a you're an author and a writer and a speaker.
Yep.
And you have a best-selling book out. I have a lot of authors that come to On Purpose Magazine, and they especially like to hear from best-selling authors, kind of their background and their experience in not only the writing and the publishing, but how they promote and that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, I brought my book out. I mean, I've been writing it for 10 years, and my husband used to say to me, oh, come on, he'd say, when are we going to see this book published? And I'd say, I don't know, but it has to get out of my head. Maybe it's never going to be published. I don't know.
Right.
And I felt a bit, you know, awkward at first, because what happens is when you've written a book, it's almost like your little baby that you've written, and you're not sure anybody else is going to learn anything, and it's kind of, I don't know if anybody's going to, you know, are they going to laugh at it, are they not going to like it, whatever. So I self-published initially, and I sold about 1,000 copies, and everyone was saying, this is a really good book. So I thought, that's really interesting, it's a really good book, maybe I better look for a publisher. And what happened was, I actually looked around and I thought, you know, Louise Hayes, 2 years to look at it, and maybe and maybe not. And I actually found a book that was in the same genre as mine, which is, you know, Messages from Water from Dr. Emoto. And I asked my assistant, said, who's the publisher of that? I said, they're my publisher. I said, you know, if they can like that, they'll like my stuff too. And she said, oh, it's this company called Beyond Words. I said, phone them up and ask them what you have to do to get the book published. And she phoned them, of course, and officially you're only supposed to email them, you know. And what happened was she phoned them up, and I phoned back, and I said, I'd like to speak to the editor. And they said, you know, the publisher, and they were like, no, you can't, you need an agent. And I said, well, may I speak to her assistant, please? I spoke to the assistant, and the assistant said, well, what's the book about? And I said, it's about the power of words and how they can influence your life. She said, send me the book. And what had happened was the day before, Cindy Black had actually said to her assistant, I wish someone would write a book about the power of words.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? And it was so interesting. Of course, a week later, I had a contract. What was really interesting for a new author, for me, was the whole process going through it. It was actually quite interesting because they said it was going to be a year away, and I was like, a year? Oh, do I have to wait a year? And she said to me, all the publicity is done before it comes out. Once it's out, you're gone. You're done. It's the 12 months before, which is the most important time. So take that 12 months to work on it, to get it right. I've actually got a little article on how to write a book in 2 weeks or less, a best-selling book, for how-to books. Anybody who wants can email me at Yvonne@globalwealth.com. I'll gladly send it off to you, and you'll learn exactly how to write your book really easily so it flows beautifully and so you've got high-energy words in it. And then if you can get the chance, if you've got a book that you're in, you know, interested in getting published, go to the Book Expo America in either New York or L.A. They alternate the years in February, and I think it's usually about February. Go to Book Expo America. It costs $300 or $400. You know what? You can literally make appointments with publishers while you are there and go and see them and find out who's interested in you.
That's powerful.
It's awesome. It's like a mega selling weekend. You know, and I was watching people come up to my publisher and they were saying, you know, could you have a look at this book? What's the book about? Okay, do a little presentation sheet. They want someone who can market themselves. They don't want to have to market you. And that's one of the most important things, too. You have to be able to market yourself. And the easiest way I found was radio shows.
Oh, good.
If you go on any radio show, your book will start selling immediately.
No, that's important. That's good stuff.
It's huge. And to get on a radio show, what you do is you call them up and say, do you have a spot free? And they say yes, and you get on the radio show.
Did you have issues with trying to get on drive time as opposed to on late night Sunday?
No, none at all. I found if the radio show are interested in your subject, your topic, they'll have you on with pleasure.
Right.
And you know,
do you push for drive time, though? Is that...
I go on anybody's radio show. Anybody who wants to develop a radio show, I'll go on internet radio. I'll go on, you know, any kind of show because it gets me out there. If I'm
you interviewed with me with your book, and this is a big deal because a lot of authors don't realize that they think if they put a website out and get it on Amazon, that's promotion. That's not promotion. You went and spoke wherever you could. You got interviews with people like myself or radio shows or. TV, wherever you could go, where anybody who would let you speak,
Yeah,
you came.
Exactly.
You showed up.
Exactly. And what's really interesting was, I was in LA, I was at Book Expo America, and I was there for a week, and I thought, I'll look around and see if there's any local radio shows to see if I can go on. And I found this show, and I emailed them, and I said, you know, I'm here for the week, do you have a spot on your show, maybe later in the week, and I'll come on it. So the lady wrote back, Tanya wrote back, and she said, sure. She said, would you be free next Thursday, you want to come into the studio? I'm like, sure, I'm here, why not? So I got a taxi to the studio. I didn't realize that I emailed into the Aware show. And you know how big the Aware show is, right?
Yes, big.
It was as simple as, I've got a book. Do you want me on your show?
You know what the good point about that is? If people realized, you know, a lot of people might get a list and go, well, I don't want to go to that show. That's a big show. They won't take me.
Exactly.
If you stop thinking that way and you start, give them all the same weight, or even call the big ones first, for God's sake.
Yes, exactly. Work top from the top and work your way down.
Yes, exactly. Don't start from the small ones and work up thinking that you're too small. You're never too...
Yes,
you don't
want
to think small.
Exactly. You think big, and what happens is they want someone who's, A, going to make them look good, and you look good too. I mean, Dr. Pat in Seattle, the Dr. Pat show, she is
phenomenal. She has a wonderful website. And,
oh, my gosh. She says, that is amazing. You are fantastic, and you feel fantastic, and you make her feel fantastic back, you know? Everybody ends up feeling wonderful, which is exactly what you want from a radio show. You know,
well,
you're great at talking, great at interviewing. You'll ask really interesting questions.
Well, thank you.
You know, and that's what we want, is someone who's going to make everybody think.
That's another important point, and maybe you can speak to real quick before I let you go, and that is people who are going, oh, my God, I have to interview on these shows. Make people know or let people know. I'm sure you were a little nervous the first time you're going to have to do your first interviews and didn't know what to expect.
Interviewers want to
have a good interview, so they do make it pretty simple for you, right?
They make it really easy for you. They really do. Here's what they do. They'll say, can you send me the 10 questions you want me to ask?
Yeah.
And the first time someone did, I thought, that's cheeky, me doing their job for them.
Right,
and then
exactly.
I thought, you know what? That's great because it keeps us both on track.
Well, you know what? I always ask people for the five questions that they want me to ask, and it's not to make me look like a genius. Give me five questions that'll make sure that you make your point. We'll keep us on track.
Exactly.
And a lot of times I may not even use those questions because from those questions I'm going to get better questions, which is fine too. So, you know, cool about interviewed, if you had to get on a TV station and just talk about your book, that could be mind-boggling and daunting as heck because you've got to come up with something. But when somebody asks you a question, how easy is it to answer a question about something you already know about?
Yes, exactly. And if you come up with your own questions, what's interesting is you're keeping on what you want to talk about, and they're keeping you on topic, which means they're not going to go off into the universe and ask you questions, you know, that you have no idea about. I mean, the one interview I didn't enjoy was a TV show. And the woman looked at me. She said, so, let's talk about God, Yvonne. And I'm like, oh, my God. We're talking about that right up. Can we just lead up gently to it? What do you believe God is? I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, don't do that to me. And I had to really think it through on the spot, which isn't fun. But she's the only one who's ever done it. Everybody else is like, interesting. So what made you write the book? What led to that? What made you explore the subject? That's really interesting. What did you discover? You know, and those are the questions. You know that because you lived it, right? So
right. Yeah, even
and
when
I
you
love
go on Oprah, they prep
book.
You for gosh sakes. They want the interview to be compelling and interesting, so they don't let you on they don't let you go on the show without practicing and running through all the questions first.
Yeah. And, you know, quite often the person who's going to interview is going to call you a couple of minutes before and say, this is how it goes. I talk to you for 15 minutes, then there's a break, then we talk for 15 minutes, then I'm going to get into Q and answer. Is that okay with you? And you go, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. It's really, and they want you to look good because when you look good, it makes them look good, too.
Absolutely. They're just looking for compelling information. They're going to make you sound as interesting as they possibly can. You don't have to do anything.
No, and their job as a radio interviewer, you want to give some great information to the people listening.
Yes.
And that's you know, your goal is to really shine out the light like a beacon, which is awesome, because that's what we're here to do as well, right? So
I tell all my interviews, and you know because I told you when we interviewed, listen, Dr. Yvonne, I don't do infomercials for anybody. If you got to give me some golden nuggets so people have some takeaways. Otherwise, it's not really good content. It's just a commercial.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be able to talk about how things work. What can you do to change things? What can you do? What's a quick fix? What can we do?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you are an awesome interview, and I appreciate your time and all the plethora of wonderful information you gave out. Everybody, please go to the site and check out Dr. Yvonne Oswald's site and her books, and definitely check out where she's going to be to see if you can get her treatments. And I'm sure
There's a little thing on the site on the front page. It says something like, "Do you want our newsletter or something?" You click it and you get a free download of a free CD. And also, when you go into that part of the site, it gives you all the free information. It gives you the mind magic, how to clear a negative emotion lesson. It gives you all. Apparently, there's lots and lots of information, like liver cleanses, and you know, I usually just send it off and say, "Can you put this on the site? Can you put this either the back end of the site?" And that's like a private entry into free information. So there's lots of free information there.
Oh, that's
it's
great.
It's really cool. Fabulous.
Very cool. Everybody, we've been speaking to Dr. Yvonne Oswald, the best-selling author of Every Word Has Power, and we were speaking today about her incredible treatment for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And again, let me thank you, Dr. Yvonne, for your time and for the wonderful information you gave us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, JW. I hope we can really get this news out to the world and make sure everybody knows how to do it. Because we're going to change the world with it really easy.
Absolutely. Everybody, have a great day and an even better tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our Made in Media Group production of On Purpose Magazine. You can find On Purpose Magazine at onpurposemagazine.com. On Purpose Magazine and JW On Purpose is the property and is a trademark of Meta Media Group, and this audio is copyright 2012, and all rights are reserved.